This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A tornado hits southeast of Salem. High winds rip the roof off a Lincoln City resort, and an outraged father castrates his daughter's 57-year-old boyfriend. Oh.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. Is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, December 15th, 2010. The Seahorse Oceanfront Resort was heavily damaged by high winds Tuesday morning. Dispatchers got a call about 5 a.m. yesterday that the roof had been blown off by the wind. A 500-foot portion of the roof ended up a block away to the east, said Captain Jim Coos of North Lincoln Fire and Rescue District. The roof actually blew over power lines 40 feet in the air. All in all, the motel lost an estimated 6,000 square feet of roofing. Debris was found two blocks away. Only one guest was in the damaged portion of the building. There were no injuries.
If I were a classic rock DJ, this is where I would say that now, all in all, it's just another mess in the sprawl, Don.
Why would you say that?
Because it would be, because it'd be comedy with a K.
That's not funny.
Hey, so this tornado that apparently was all the rage yesterday was
indeed.
All the. Now I have to ask this out of the gate, just so I know exactly how to prepare how the rest of my comedy should unfold throughout this hour. Deaths?
I don't think so.
Severe maimings, injuries, maulings of any kind.
No, just people without power, really. There were no deaths and no serious injuries.
All right.
You can be as funny about this as you like.
Well, because here's the thing. Because if there are no deaths, then really, it's not a tornado. What you're really just talking about there is weather. You're just doing a lot of stories about, this is an FYI from me to, like, everybody with access to a television transmitter, everybody who's on the radio, everybody with, like, a printing press. You're just talking about weather, which happens every day. I mean, I don't want to be too pedantic about it or anything, but wait, hold on. Let me look out the window. Oh, my God, there's weather out there, too. Get inside!
Well, do you have that little refurb thing available?
Wait, hold on. Let me see if I can. You mean,
Well, wait. I'm not ready for it yet. Hold on.
All right.
I'm going to do that. Because, see, the thing is, it was a tornado, Rick. It just wasn't a deadly tornado.
I don't really know that was. Hold on. Let me see if I can. No, that's never right. That sound. Here's the thing. I prepared this bed, and it's never accurate. It's never what we're looking. Let me just.
Walk on.
No. I got a whole pile of things here that don't really fit any situation or scenario.
Don't yeah, but it's. Say things?
It's just called Happy Dog Bark. Which, let's be honest, that could be the name of a Japanese food cart. I mean, theoretically speaking.
Do you want to know about the tornado?
Yes.
A tornado with 120-mile-per-hour gusts touched down in the city of Almsville late Tuesday morning. which is apparently southeast of Salem.
Yeah, let's all also quit pretending that we knew where it was. Don't tell me about how you're from there or how you it's a quaint little fishing village where I've spent a lot of Sunday afternoons. Nobody knew where it was unless you actually lived there.
It damaged and destroyed dozens of homes and displaced at least 10 families. About 11:40 a.m., the powerful tornado touched down in the small city, which is about 12 miles southeast of Salem, taking a storm track of 5 miles and lasting the same number of minutes.
Uh-huh.
According to the National Weather Service, the classified EF2 tornado had a total width of 150 yards.
Okay.
So it was 150 yards. That's not a very big tornado.
It really isn't. And I'm not saying that it's going to be put out of your home or that it's, you know, that if you don't got a place to stay or that it tears, as George Clinton would say, if it tears the roof off the sucker, that's, you know, I'm not saying that I'm happy about that. But I'm just noting that wind happens all the time, like every day, nearly everywhere to one degree or another. And guess what? Wind just knocks things over. Let's just quit this posturing that it's the finger of God that is touched down in Oslo.
Yeah, but I mean, a tornado is different from just wind. A tornado's all it's not all
the,
whirly.
Well, yeah, it's I suppose it's in a different shape to some degree, but that's really the extent
it's
of it.
Special.
Let me just ask you this. I mean, would you rather have this tornado come through town, or rather just have like regular sort of unformed wind coming by at 150 miles an hour and just lasting for a longer period of time? You probably go for the tornado. Why? More isolated damage.
Also, because it's just more fun to say that you know, there was a tornado.
That's right. And then, you know what? You can be one of those people who bores, the rest of your family for like 15 years about how I was here the day of the great Amsville Twister touchdown. There were no onions or belts to be found anywhere.
Governor Kulongowski arrived in Amsville before 4 p.m. and praised the local emergency response while noting the horrible timing of the natural disaster. This happened at the worst time of year, he said. We're 11 days from Christmas.
Seriously, this is the thing. I wish that I could have been a reporter there just to ask him, Governor Kulongowski, what would have been the best day for this to happen? Could you please? I would like to know now the best date for any tornado or natural disaster to strike Amsville. Thank you.
Would it be better if it was closer to Easter, sir?
And just to be have a fedora with like a little press pass in the brim, marking as you know, like as an up and coming cub reporter who's going to get the big scoop in Amsville.
Yeah. Or the grizzled reporter where you're chewing on like the little last inch of your stogie going, Governor, tell me, when would be a good time for there to be a tornado?
And then referencing the name of some local power broker or shot caller. Are you going to call in Muggsy O'Connor to help put the fix in for this? I'm sorry. I don't mean to take this with anything less than the appropriate degree of seriousness. It is wind, after all.
It is.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. It's Wednesday. If it was yesterday, I'd call it Wednesday, but see that I'm not that guy, and also it's not,
And this happened yesterday, so it was Wednesday.
I suppose. I mean, I guess if you really want to stretch for the joke. I guess if you want to reach for it, which is the way you got to do it sometimes.
There's nothing you can do with Tuesday, is there?
No.
With wind.
No,
there's nothing.
No, sometimes you really just gotta stretch. You gotta push it to the limit. Walk along the razor's edge. This is Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. My name is Rick Emerson. This is Dawn Taylor coming up later on this hour. By the way, we have your entertainment news, also your science on the march. You can get this program via iTunes later on in the afternoon if you want to do that, at iTunes. And you can get it as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It's also available on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Las Vegas has experienced 10 casino robberies this year. The most recent one at the Bellagio on Tuesday morning was odd because the culprit swiped more than $1 million, not dollars, but casino chips. Lieutenant Clint Nichols with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department says how it began.
He entered the casino and went directly to a craps table where he confronted several patrons with a firearm.
Nichols says the man who was wearing a full face helmet first threatened the customers and then...
It ends with an ellipsis, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And then
he told everyone not to move, and he took approximately $1.5 million worth of casino chips.
Well, that's just bizarre because he must have, not like I'm some crime lord, but it seems like he must have a fence or somebody who's waiting to sort of, because you can't use those anywhere, and obviously they're going to change out all the chips now.
Yeah, I guess they would do that, because I'm thinking, I guess you'd bring them back in and you'd cash them in later, but I guess they would do that.
Yeah, they're going to be keeping an eye out for that guy, and so he must have, but even if he did have, like, some fence or some guy who was going to move the loot for him, what's that guy going to do with him? Because that guy is not going to be able to get his... The chips are fundamentally useless once the Bellagio changes them out, unless...
Do they do that, then? Because I didn't realize they did that. They'll do that?
Well, look, I'm not that bright, and that's the first thing I would do. I mean, I would immediately get rid of them, because you got to figure that if they're purloined chips, that is effectively then $1.5 million that you lose, but only if the chips are allowed to... See, this is
But you already have so many chimps in circulation, not just in the casino right this minute, but also other people who have brought them home with them.
Right, but those
such.
Have been paid for. That's the thing.
But they, people, no, because people could bring them in and cash them in for money at any time.
Right, but in other words, but to get those chips in the first place, they had to give the casino money. There's been an equal exchange there. These chips, though, have left the casino. Although, did he steal them from other players or from the racks that were sitting there? Does it say?
That I don't know.
Because if he stole them from the other players, then it's a wash for the Bellagio. If he stole them from, I mean, you've been to casinos. If he stole them from the racks that the dealer has, from the bank, basically, from which the dealer gives the players new chips, that, though, is a loss for the casino because the chips have left and an equal amount of money has not been put in to take their place.
But what I'm saying, though, is the problem with changing out the chips, though, is that those chips are, in effect, good as currency. Every single person who is already gambling...
Oh, you're saying people who already have chips won't be able to bring them back.
Right. You can't really do that.
I guess, but I mean, but how many, you know, but the deal is if you leave a casino without cashing out, like, that's on you. I mean, it's...
No, it's really not. You can bring the chips back at any time and you can cash them in.
No, I'm not saying you can't, but I'm saying, like... I think they probably have the right to say, no, you can't, because they're no longer legal. Well, because they're no longer legal tender.
I don't know.
No, but I do know. That's the thing. They're no longer they're no longer legal. Like, you can't go to the store buy anything with them. I mean, the only place you can use them at the is at the Bellagio, and it seems to me that's at their discretion.
Yeah.
And also, I think the only reason that anybody would take chips home, it seems to me, I'm just thinking this through, it seems like the only reason people would take chips home is if it's a necessarily small amount that you either have forgotten about, and it's like, hey, what's in my pants? Oh, hey, it's some chips in the Bellagio. Or you do what, you know what I've done occasionally. You take one as a souvenir, so like a 50 cent or a buck chip or something at home, as just like, the time I spent at the El Cortez, and you just take it home with you. You know, if you have 50 grand in chips, you're not going to walk out with that because of the recognition that something like this might happen, or or the Almsville tornado might come for the Bellagio next, and then what are you going to do?
I think we're overthinking this.
These are the sorts of things that fascinate me. This is the sort of question I live for because it's because then it requires something to be. This is the sort of story problem I can really get behind. If my math classes were set up like this, then I would have done a lot better.
Well, apparently the guy then left on a motorbike.
Really?
Yeah.
Got on his bad motor scooter and rode.
He took approximately $1.5 million worth of casino chips. The suspect then ran back out of the casino following his original route, jumped on his motorcycle, and exited westbound on Flamingo at a high rate of speed.
I wonder what denomination the chips were, because $1.5 million worth of chips, and then the guy's on like a motorbike. And motorbike is an interesting phrase, because it's like, was it a Vespa? Was it a Harley? Was it one of those...
Dirt bike?
Or those miniaturized things that those jackasses on my street are always driving at like 2 a.m. So I wonder exactly how many chips equaled $1.5 million and in what he had to stow them before he could get away.
Many questions.
I really do. All right. Somebody's saying if they don't retire the chips, all the guy has to do is come back and cash them out $100 at a time, have his friends involved. If they do $500 at a time, even if his friends take a 50% cut, that guy still gets $750,000 if they cash them out incrementally over a few years. You could do $500 a week and never get caught.
Yeah.
All right.
No. A Portland architect has been sentenced to 7.5 years in prison for possessing child pornography in a case that led to investigations across the United States and in foreign countries. Paul Pavlock pleaded guilty in September in Washington County Circuit Court to 10 counts of encouraging child sex abuse. Oregon Attorney General John Kroger says the investigation identified more than 85 suspects in 20 states and 19 foreign countries. The 44-year-old man was also ordered to pay up to $40,000 in restitution to two victims. Judge Thomas Cole said Tuesday the sentence he imposed was heavily influenced by a victim's statement read in court by a lawyer. The now 19-year-old woman wrote that she lives every day knowing that someone is being entertained by her pain. The Pavlock investigation began in October 2008 with a tip from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
By the way, did you ever see that article? I guess it was where did they run this? They ran this piece of like the New York Times or something a while back, and they were talking about how Microsoft. The great thing about Microsoft being evil And they are. Let's have no illusions about that. The great thing about Microsoft being evil, or any company, but especially Microsoft, it seems, is that they're constantly trying to do a sort of Catholic thing of buying off, buying their guilt out by way of ancillary good works. You know, it's like whatever you want to say about Bill Gates and just being a cretin in so many ways, or however junky his software may be. You know, he's given like $400 million or something to fight malaria.
Yeah.
So you can't, you know, you can't front on that, as the young people say. The other thing that Microsoft has started doing, though, is they just took, you know, they just took their entire brain trust and they sent it over to the FBI or, you know, someplace or whatever, a couple years ago to help the FBI create this software that could break encryption on and descramble the imaging of blurred out child porn photos. Because these guys, what they would do is, you know, there's like, you know, there's...
Yeah,
you know,
online yeah.
communities of whatever, where you know they, you know, these whack jobs get together and, you know, share photos of themselves and some small shaved Asian boy that they've, you know, that they've rented for the evening, and they'll blur their own faces out, you know, because they don't want to be caught by the man, and then it's like just them and the kid, but the guy's face is all and so Bill Gates, I think, realizing that probably another Justice Department investigation was on the horizon, said, what can we do to get the government on our side? I know, we'll catch pedophiles. And so Microsoft created this entire software program that does nothing but unscramble those photographs. And they showed a before and after in the Times, where they had a picture of, and there was nothing explicit happening, but it was a picture in a hotel room of a child, and the guy who had uploaded a photograph of himself with this child, and the guy's face is all blurred out. And then they show the photograph right next to it where the Microsoft guys have gone and just miraculously unblurred it, and you can see the guy's features.
Wow.
And then they just put it all over television in, like, Singapore, because they identified the hotel room as being in Singapore. I swear to God, by analyzing the fabric of the, you know, like, the pattern in the bedspread and doing some, like, I don't know, insane Microsoft magic where they then figured out what hotel it was. And they said, hey, by the way, here's a picture of this guy. He was in Singapore about this time last year. Everybody go find him now. And then they found the guy like a month later, and he's being flogged in a jail cell right now. So,
wow.
Just saying, it's a weird time to be alive, Don.
It is. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has a full agenda ready for the next 3 weeks of the lame duck session, and if need be, he's prepared to make lawmakers work through Christmas. Reid has proposed voting on the START Treaty, the DREAM Act, the $1.2 trillion spending bill, repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, expanding health care for 9/11 first responders, and taking care of a few pending nominations while he's at it. But while the Nevada senator wants to advance as much legislation as he can before the next Congress is seated, Republicans are taking a more leisurely approach, preferring to wait until they're in control. The showdown is a matter of political calculus, the Christian Science Monitor writes. While Democrats don't have the numbers to overcome Republican opposition in the Senate, they want to force Republicans into controversial votes against key Democratic priorities. Rather than passing big-ticket spending legislation now, the Republicans have called for short-term funding bills and have accused Reid of trying to ruin Christmas.
Really?
Yes.
They had to end with that one. And also, he's trying to ruin Christmas for children. That would have been the only additional brushstroke they could have put there. They really accused him of trying to ruin Christmas?
Yes. He's trying to ruin everyone's Christmas by making them work through the holidays.
See, really, you got to admire that. I mean, it's, you know, they just go right for the knees. There's just no prevaricating there. They just try to find the worst thing they could possibly say. And then they just, you know, they accused him of going home and setting fire to puppies to relax in the evening.
You're a mean one. Harry Reid.
Jesus, God. All right. You are listening to Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. It's I keep saying Tuesday because I'm off by that one day because of the Monday thing.
It's Wednesday.
It is Wednesday, December 15th, 2010. Thank you for joining us. Don't let your Christmas be ruined by lack of a good tree. By the way, Max went right back to work on drinking the water from the base of the tree. There must be something I'm wondering now, because it's not like he doesn't have water, you know, like in his regular bowl. I'm wondering if there's a thing now, because we were just talking about this yesterday, at Christmas Mountain Trees, and that is ChristmasMountainTrees.com is their website, a fine business partner here at Legion of News. They help to preserve Christmas, is what they do. They're the anti-Reid, if you will. But the guy, Troy, who runs the farm along with his wife, Jennifer, now he was talking that whole thing about how they up the sugar content of the trees, which makes the needles stay on longer, and it's like the scent is preserved. So then I wonder if, because there's a higher sugar content in their Christmas trees, if then it's somehow a little bit of it is leaching into the water as, you know, you put the bowl down there and you put the tree in it or whatever, and as the tree is drinking up the water, whatever the word is. If there's
flavoring the water with the sweetness.
Yeah, you got to figure if pitch comes out of the bark and the sides of the tree and the needles as it does, if some of that is going back into the water, and dogs only need a little bit of something to be able to detect it. If so, now it's like a sort of a sugar water, and that's why he's drinking it so much.
Or he could just be, he's a dog and he's going, hey, new water.
I'm tired of licking my private areas. Maybe I'll drink this tree water.
This water must be good. It wasn't here before.
Or it must be good because it's in the room where the other dog gets his food. And
right.
Of course, he thinks everything in that room is better. Well,
see.
The only way we can get to the bottom of this is for you all to go and get your trees at Christmas Mountain Trees and then conduct the same experiment at your homes. You can also go to facebook.com/Christmas Mountain. Mm-hmm. They got the driving directions there, so you can figure out how to get there in the most efficient way. They have, weather updates and all of that. You go up and you tell them you heard it here in Legion of News, by the way. Troy, Jennifer, and Troy's brother-in-law, Kevin, who seems to have this Santa hat permanently. It's like a fix to his head. I get the feeling he kind of never takes it off. It's just sort of there year-round. He is a jolly sort, though. You go up to Christmas Mountain Trees, and they're going to take you on a ride through in the back of a wagon. You, your family, your kids, your loved ones. When I say wagon, it's also, it's not like it's a...
They're going to take you in the back of the wagon.
Well, it's not a paddy wagon. And the other thing, it also is not what it sounds like to me, which is like a bring out your dead kind of a wagon, where it's just like a hand car. I mean, it's a... How would you even describe it?
I don't know. It's a big platform on wheels, and it has bench seating, and it's covered with a thing so that you don't get snowed on, and it's very festive.
This is a horrible way to put it. I almost want to say it's like this. It's almost like one of those sort of long truck van things that they would bring the wounded to the 4077th on MASH, but without but without walls. It has a cover, has a top, but no sides. Well, it's like that. Anyway, 175 miles of trees. Obviously, you don't have to see them all, although you can ask to. And then you select the tree that is the most perfect, the most stylish, the most suitable for your home. And by the time you get back to the bottom of the mountain, the tree is there. It's had the needles taken off, baled, ready to go. So, and most importantly, more than anything else, more than your friends, your family, the love of our Savior Jesus, you've supported this program. That really is the most important thing of all. That's really, if we're to be honest, that's the only thing that matters. So everything else can just get bent. You can find out more
and
by...
And you've saved Christmas. You're not like Harry Reid.
That's right. You don't want to be like Harry Reid, do you? ChristmasMountainTrees.com is the website, or Facebook.com/ChristmasMountain. Here is Don Taylor.
A West Palm Beach, Florida man reportedly smashed his neighbor's window with a rock because he was upset about a supposed voodoo curse. Police say 26-year-old Renald Luis was arrested Sunday and charged with shooting or throwing a missile into a dwelling. He was held on $25,000 bail. The neighbor told police that he heard a smashing sound from his living room, where he found a large stone and broken glass next to his adult daughter on the couch. When the neighbor ran outside and asked Luis why he threw the rock, Luis reportedly said, "You put voodoo on me." Luis then demanded that the neighbor, quote, "take it off."
So this is like he was some sort of a juju.
Right.
All right.
No injuries were reported, and it wasn't immediately clear if the neighbor had put voodoo on Luis.
I know this sounds like I'm trying to do a Danny Kaye sketch, but are voodoo and juju the same thing? Is voodoo the religion that puts a juju on you? I'm sorry, that was an inadvertent rhyme. I didn't mean to rhyme there at the end. I really didn't mean to do that.
I'm not having this conversation with
you. All right. I just realized that...
Yeah. Some Florida citrus growers say they had crop damage from last night's deep freeze, but they say it wasn't quite as bad as initially feared. Are you okay over there?
I am.
Dear Lord.
Okay.
Kristen Gunter of the Florida Citrus Processors Association says forecasts of calm winds tonight have growers worried because that cold air can settle over the groves, but it's not necessarily all bad news.
One of the advantages of there being no wind is that growers can turn on their irrigation, and that can be used to help protect the trees.
Okay.
Oh, Christian Gunter. Gunter says even if certain crops are damaged, the situation still can be salvaged.
Fruit that got a little ice slush in it last night, and we're told that that's just in a few pockets around Florida. That fruit is perfectly good to be processed and made into juice. So they're kind of rushing that to the plants right now.
I have no idea why I find that so funny.
There's something about her. Kristen Gunter definitely has a certain intangible aura about her
she does.
I quite like.
What's
up with your eye over there?
I don't know. It's,
you keep
itchy.
Jabbing your finger into it.
I don't know.
That's not that spider that crawled into your eye while you were asleep.
It's that same spider.
Oh, God. That's the feeling of the eggs right there.
It laid eggs in my eye, and now they're hatching.
Awesome.
I'm going to have eye spiders.
Eye spiders. It's the worst phrase I've ever heard. I'm going to form a band called Eye Spiders.
Oh, I'm going to do some science names.
And all their songs just kind of sound like... Rah!
Science, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Science. It's
I could find it.
Would you like some finding music? All right.
You're a little loopy today, aren't you?
I really am.
After a battery of forensic tests, scientists have concluded that an embalmed head that has been moved between private collections belongs to the assassinated King of France, Henry IV, according to NPR. The scientists matched attributes of the head to features in portraits of the popular monarch and found striking similarities. A dark mark on his right nostril,
the
for example.
Mark.
The dark nostril mark.
Okay.
And a healed jaw fracture resulting from a failed assassination attempt in 1594. Radiocarbon techniques dated the head to the 17th century, while the embalming methods used on the head matched those employed at the dawn of the Bourbon dynasty. Henry IV was laid to rest in Paris after being assassinated in 1610 at the age of 57. His body was dug up during the French Revolution and his head snatched by revolutionaries.
They stole the head?
They stole the head. Between 50 and 80% of global household water goes down the drain, with plenty of useful life left.
Excellent.
So-called gray water that drains away after clothes washing, bathing, and showering could be reused to flush toilets or to water outdoor landscaping, putting an increasingly precious resource to second use, says experts.
This is more fake science. This is not real. This is science with it. Yeah, this is science with like an extra Z or something at the end, and like a trademark sign next to it.
Yeah, but this is a story that allows me to say a really cool name.
All right.
It's a waste to use high quality potable water for things like flushing our toilets or watering our flowers, said Mina Palaniapin. There we go. Of the Pacific Institute of Oakland. Who authored a recent report on gray water use.
I don't feel the name really lived up to the sell you gave
it. It looks great on paper, because it's Mina, M-E-E-N-A, and then her last name is Palaniap.
Can I just tell you this? Can I tell you that
I'm bored with that story.
On Friday, Eric Snyder, Eric Snyder was here, and there was some story. Wasn't tremendously interesting, but it was about... You know, one of those things where, like, some rare banknote or, like, a misprinted bill from the Treasury.
Was that the story with Zebulon Miracle?
Zebulon Miracle was the guy's name. And he just sounded so completely normal and apparently had not gone into a career as a magician, which is, like, unbelievable.
Or a preacher.
How could you not become Zebulon Miracle? How could you not just immediately go off and, like, get in your Interocitor and fly off to, you know, someplace, some other planet to live?
I'd start my own church. I mean, that's a great thing.
Yeah, it really is.
For the first time since the 1980s, more teenagers reported smoking pot in the past month than cigarettes.
Well done.
A new study from the National Institute on Drug Abuse finds. The survey also revealed that teenagers are generally taking a more relaxed attitude towards the drug. Over 21% of high school seniors said they'd smoked within the past 30 days.
Let me understand this. And these kids who smoke pot, they had a, quote, more relaxed attitude.
Right.
Okay.
One in three said they smoked within the past year, and one in four high school sophomores reported smoking in the past year.
Okay.
Marijuana use also spiked amongst eighth graders, and in a rather remarkable increase, 6.1% of seniors said they smoked pot daily, a 5.2% jump over last year.
I think really the only thing that's changed here is the willingness of high schoolers, especially to admit that they're getting high all the time, which is like always the case.
Gil Kerlikowski, director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, blamed the numbers on legislation to legalize medical marijuana use. Calling marijuana smoked medicine is absolutely incorrect, he said at a press conference in Washington. So it's the reason teenagers are getting high is because of...
cancer.
The desire to legalize medical marijuana.
It's also Harry Reid's fault, Don.
While teenagers are smoking more and are more willing to experiment with ecstasy as well, apparently, they're also shying away from other drugs. A report found that prescription painkiller use has dipped in the past year, and the teen alcohol consumption is at historically low levels.
I just want to know who these kids are that are so willing to talk about what it is that they're getting wasted on. When I was a younger man, that was called being a snitch or a narc, Don. And you know what happened to snitches?
They sleep with the fishes?
No, see, that's good, though. I like the way you're doing a cross-generational reference there. We'll just go with yours, actually.
Okay.
No, yours is good.
A Japanese salmon species thought to be extinct for 70 years is alive and well in a lake near Mount Fuji, a science professor said Wednesday. The black kokanee, or kunimasu in Japanese, was thought to have died out in 1940 when a hydroelectric project made its native lake in northern Akita Prefecture more acidic. Before then, 100,000 eggs were reportedly transported to Lake Saiko, but the species was still thought to have died off. It's probably Seiko, not Seiko.
Yeah, probably.
But Tetsuji Nakabo, a professor at Kyoto University, said his team of researchers found the species in Lake Seiko, about 310 miles south of the native lake. "I was really surprised," he said. "This is a very interesting fish. It's a treasure. We have to protect it and not let it disappear again."
Okay.
Because Japanese people are, you know.
Had you noticed that it was gone?
Well, I didn't, but I don't spend much time in Japan.
All right.
The salmon is still listed as extinct in the public records in the Environment Ministry. Yobukatsu Naniwa, an official at the ministry, said the claim would be investigated before records are due to be updated in 2012.
I think last week we figured out how to say dawn in Japanese.
Did we?
It was like Akatsuki or something. I'll have to look it up.
I like that.
All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
That was all the science.
Really? We the end of science?
Yeah, I'm done with science.
End of science for Wednesday, December 15th, 2010. Thank you for joining us. It is Legion of News coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com. Today we have your Nazi watch. Also, Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas. We have two exciting... By the way, that's two of like nine stories that I could have given you, but I'm trying to parcel them out.
Yeah. Also, I have a Hick watch.
Hick watch, Nazi watch, Joy of Christmas. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will join us, and we'll have a top five today as well. So this is because of... So we'll get a more in-depth report on your husband, Patrick, next hour. But for now... Thumbs up, thumbs down, or is it like that conventional wisdom thing in Newsweek where it's in the middle?
Thumbs up. He is sans a gallbladder and has four little band-aids on his abdomen where they cut little holes in him and poked things in and sucked out his gallbladder.
Exactly the sound that I thought it made. It's just sort of like kind of an advanced lipo sound.
And so for the time being, he seems to be getting better. They still aren't entirely sure if that's what made him sick, but they took it out. So somebody's going to be cutting up his gallbladder and looking at it today, and I wished I could be there for that. But apparently they don't let family members go into the forensics area to watch people dissect organs.
Is it a thing where somebody's just going to sit and stare at him for a long time and just see if he starts to twitch at some point or not?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Okay. So we'll talk more about that next hour, but we've got a top five coming up next hour as well, or at some point in the Rick Emerson Show today. So that is at Rick Emerson. .com. You just go to rickemerson.com, click on the little thing that says Rick Emerson, and for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day, you, can become a listener to that glorious program. Somebody asked me yesterday if we were still sort of rolling along with you. The first week is free. Yes, you're free. That's how much Rick Emerson and Dawn Taylor and everyone at the Emerson News Network cares about you individually. You know, not really, but sort of pseudo-individually. The first week is it's on us because...
Because we basically know that after you've listened a little bit, you'll love us so much you won't go away.
That's right. It's like an oral infusion of crack, like a big bag of crack, but radio.
But jammed into your ears.
Jammed into your ears. That's right. And then pounded in with like a ball peen hammer of some kind. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Police say a man became so outraged over his daughter's choice in men that he castrated her new boyfriend using a bread knife. Helmut Seifert is facing attempted murder charges after allegedly castrating 57-year-old Philip Ginscher.
This was in Germany, wasn't it?
Well, of course it is.
Of course.
For dating his teenage daughter. The father, a 47-year-old factory worker, has asked authorities in the town of Bielefeld to intervene, but the officers had told him they had no authority over the girl. Seifert then decided to take matters into his own hands, rounded up two of his work colleagues, and proceeded to the victim's house. When they arrived, they forced Ginscher to remove his trousers and allegedly castrated him while he was fully conscious.
Now, when you say a bread knife, are we talking the serrated kind that you saw through, let's say, like a loaf of French bread with, or a baguette? Or are we talking like a butter knife? Or is this sort of a shorter sort of steak knife kind of thing? Because I've seen those too, like at your spaghetti factory, let's say.
They really don't specify. When I hear bread knife, I think one of the long serrated ones myself.
With sort of the blunt edge, but with the jags on it.
Right.
All right, because that makes all the difference.
Yeah. Seifert told police, "I received a phone call anonymously that my daughter was involved with a guy 40 years older than her. You said you couldn't stop him, so I did. I saw it as my duty as a father." He's pleaded guilty and will stand trial for attempted murder.
Okay. Well, there you go. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Yes. I don't know what's next. What's next?
Walk on, walk on.
There's so much news. Bay District, Florida school board members are so marveling that none of them was hurt after a gunman opened fire during a board meeting.
Did you watch this? Video?
I just read a little bit about this morning. I didn't know.
Oh, the entire thing's on
morning.
Tape. The entire thing is on video because it's a school board meeting, which is, I guess, I don't know if they actually air it on like one of the a local cable access station or something, or like in one of the community access. But they certainly record it, maybe because they put it on the school's website or something. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it is a modern era. Maybe they want people to be able to attend the meetings virtually. But the entire thing is recorded. It's like Milton from Office Space went in and just started with a whole list of grievances. And by the way, it's just the most amazing. It ends with the guy just unloading the full clip from the gun and hitting nothing. And it's not because he wasn't aiming. Like, he points the gun. It was like some full-on Pulp Fiction business. He points the gun at the guy from like 3 feet away and says, you know, something, blah, 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 and I'll show you a thing or two about it, and just begins fighting. And it just hits all around the guy and, like, never actually strikes him.
Oh, my God.
And then he tries the same thing with, like, two other people and just can't seem to hit anything at all. The only thing he hit was his own head.
Oh, God. Board member Ryan Neves said his life will never be the same.
Let's see. This is shooting one. Let's see about the many shooting cuts that I have here. Which one?
This would be one.
All right. Let me see if I've got the right one.
I'm not a pansy, but I will tell you I was very afraid.
I didn't appreciate
it. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not even the right cut, but let's.
This is something that changes you for life. It's not something that's easily forgotten. It's not something that's a news headline today and it's in the trash bin tomorrow.
Now, I would see, and I think that guy's probably true. I mean, we'll all move on. But it wasn't like a thing, like the guy just kicked in the door and, like, fired some shots and ran away. I mean, it was like he did this whole monologue. It was like he was doing some weird Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, but, like, sponsored by the NRA. And it just ended with him just shooting at everybody. And then spray painting a huge V for Vendetta thing on the wall. That's how he started the meeting.
Did he really?
I can't believe you haven't seen this.
No. I was sitting in a hospital waiting room until midnight last night, and then I got up this morning and...
Somebody has time to Twitter about watching Cannibal the Musical, though. I'm just saying. Seems like you could stay plugged into the world around you, dog. You've got the internet. You're sitting there with your phone. I'm surprised people didn't send you the link, is my point. Right on your iPhone, you could have watched it.
I'm surprised as well.
Listeners, you've let us all down today. I want you to think about it and take appropriate action.
Well, these witnesses are still processing their close call.
I'm not a pansy, but I will tell you I was very afraid.
I didn't appreciate how close some of the bullets came to me.
You feel helpless. He was helpless out there.
I didn't appreciate how close some of the bullets, as though it, like the bullets decided to make him uncomfortable. like they were neighborhood toughs jostling him at a Walmart.
And I'm not a pansy.
Yeah.
But I was afraid when the guy was shooting at me point blank.
It's awesome. The guy goes in and he, I forget what he even says. He's, you know, point of parliamentary procedure or whatever. And then he just, but then he walks up to like the whiteboard and he goes and just spray paints a huge V for Vendetta thing. But then just goes on some like long ass, like rambling monologue about nothing. And then ends with like his total failure to hit anybody at all with, that's why we can laugh about it because no one was killed except for the guy. And he was obviously just a useless load. So... There's a great moment, by the way. My friend Siegfried, Siegfried is always the guy. He's like a human. You know what it is? He's like that thing you use to skim the scum off the top of your swimming pool. He skims the scum and then sends it to us. He sent me a great video. It was taken from a different angle. There's a great moment in the shooting video, which is a thing you don't get to say very often, where the guy is there with the gun and he's waving it at one of the school board members from me to you, from just like 3 feet. And he's like, and furthermore, and he's clearly getting ready to like fire the guy. And a woman sneaks up behind him and wallops him on the head with her purse.
Oh, good.
But it's a totally ineffective hit. So then he turns around and he like bats her with the butt of the pistol or something. And then she just sort of scampers away. And then he turns back to the guy. And then he's even closer to the guy. But that's then like he fires shortly after. And again, can't hit anything. I think he hit a stapler at one point, strangely enough.
School Superintendent Bill Husfeldt credits security officer Mike Jones with saving their lives.
Mike shoots him twice before he finally turns around. And Mike, I'm telling you, Mike saved our lives.
Now, see, I must have missed this part because the guy, when the cops were closing in, you know, he did what they all do. They just, he just turns the gun on himself, which is either the right way to end it or not. I can never really figure that out. I'm of two minds on that. Because you figure, on the one hand, I always just want to get those guys in a small room somewhere and just, give them a whole lot of, give them a whole lot of NYPD bluing before they, because I want to know, like, what it's all about. Like, what is it that made you crazy? Because the answer is always something that's so minuscule that it's fascinating. Like they discontinued Great Pop-Tarts or something. And so, like, that's it. I'm going to kill everybody I see. But then on the other hand, you got to figure he's just saved us a lot of money this way. So I just never know. Well, we have more on this that we'll get to next hour, by the way. And I have that video that I'll post.
Yes, we will. Tacoma police detectives are trying to unravel a mystery after a boot was found on the shores of the Tide Flats in Tacoma. Officials say the boot contained the remains of a human foot. Detectives are releasing a picture of the boot in hopes they can identify the person it came from. I did not actually upload the picture, but if you like, you know, go online and search Tacoma boot, you'll find a picture of
it. Is it, but I mean, is it just, can you see the remains or is it just a boot?
No, it's just a boot.
Yeah, all right.
The boot is a boy's size 6 Ozark Trail brand hiking boot sold in Walmart stores from 2004 to 2005. Due to the size of the boot, the foot likely belonged to a juvenile or small adult. Investigators believe the boot could have floated into the area from either the, Puyallup? Was
closer.
That right?
Puyallup.
Puyallup River or the Puget Sound. Tacoma police detectives are looking for any information on the missing persons that may be associated with this foot and boot.
Okay.
So if you are missing a boot and or a foot, call the Tacoma police.
It is Tacoma, however, so if something bad happened to you, you almost certainly deserved it. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, December 15th. 2010, coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson radio program, we get your Nazi Watch, also Hick Watch, Joy of Christmas, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, and the top five. So because of your husband, Patrick, going under the blade, as Dee Snider would say,
yes.
We'll be doing the top five songs with sick in the title. These are the top five sick songs that is during the Rick Emerson show.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you. And also because of my, I'll just say this now, because of my husband recuperating, this sort of thing, I will not be joining Fatboy Roberts for Hamfister Radio today. Last week, Sabrina Miller was kind enough to sit in for me. And this week, Robert Wagner is going to be joining Mr. Roberts in my stead. So that's 4 p.m. today here on Cascadia. Hamfisted Radio, Fatboy Roberts and Robert Wagner.
So that is about 3 hours and 50 minutes from now. If you're listening live, that's at 4 p.m. Pacific time at Cascadia.fm, or you can download it later on at your leisure. Here is Don Taylor.
A refrigerator fell 4 stories from a building at 22nd and Wells in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, killing one person Tuesday morning. Officials say workers were trying to move the refrigerator out of the building, which is under renovation. They were trying to push the refrigerator off the 4th floor balcony and thought the area below was clear. The refrigerator fell and crushed another worker who did not hear the all clear sign.
It doesn't sound like they were trying to push the refrigerator off the 4th floor balcony. Sounds like they succeeded there.
Milwaukee police are calling the incident a freak accident.
Or regrettable. I was waiting for that. Or unfortunate.
They actually use the word freak, apparently.
So. Here's the thing. If I had to go, you know, if I had to go at a, what do they call it? Not an unexpected time, but a, you know, but
untimely?
Untimely. That's, thank you, Don. That's what I was looking for. You know, so if, you know, if I'm like, whatever, 40, 45, 50, whatever, before, chronologically speaking, my time is up, before I'm at the end of my presumed life expectancy, if I really have to have an untimely demise, you know what I would like? I really would like to be killed by a falling safe or an anvil. But I want to have enough time to look up and register like a cartoonish sort of double take.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that'd be interesting to go out sort of, you know, Hanna-Barbera style.
That's kind of similar to mine, which I've shared with you before, is that if I had to choose an untimely demise, I would like to be unexpectedly decapitated.
Yeah.
But just in, preferably in such a way that my head, like, sort of rolls to where I can actually see in those last couple of seconds of consciousness before my brain shuts off, I can see that I've been detached from my body. And so I can just have that moment of like, oh, crap, my head came off. And then that's the last thing I think.
Having your head land in Dean Wormer's lap.
Yeah.
All right.
It's good to have a dream.
Here is Don Taylor.
In the midst of last December's climate talks, Fox News honchos sent out an email clarifying the organization's position on global warming. It's unproven until further notice. Journalists were forbidden from saying that the planet had warmed or cooled without immediately pointing out that such theories are based upon data the critics have called into question, wrote Fox DC bureau chief Bill Salmon. Previously, Salmon had instructed reporters to use the phrase government option instead of public option when discussing health care. Media Matters got a copy of the email, which was sent only 15 minutes after a Fox correspondent reported that 2000 to 2009 was on track to be the warmest decade on record. At the time, Fox was promoting coverage of ClimateGate, a media-driven scandal surrounding emails sent between scientists at the University of East Anglia's Climactic Research Unit.
Well, this is the thing where if I remember this ClimateGate, which is a stupid name for a story, by the way, and I wonder if Fox News just has a macro that they just hit on their keyboard that, like,
gate.
Don't,
oh.
mustn't, you know, or gate, sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, where, like, somebody says something that wanders too close to, you know, either the truth or just something they don't want said, and they immediately generate memoranda, you know, by the truckload, demanding that word or phrase or whatever not be used ever again. I don't really care anymore about this. I was going to talk more, but I'm done.
Okay.
All right.
A missing Waldport, Oregon man was found dead Monday inside a van partially submerged in a pond along Highway 101. Investigators believe that Levine Gulsevig's van veered off the east shoulder of Highway 101 down an embankment and into the pond. It was partially submerged in the water when they arrived. Gulsevig, 82, was pronounced dead at the scene. Investigators have not said exactly when they believe the crash occurred, but Gulsevig was reported missing on Monday. His family said he may have been disoriented when he left home due to a medical issue.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson radio program is next hour. Still to come this hour, you have your entertainment news coming right down the pike, down the pipeline, on the horizon, approaching you at great velocity. Brought to you by Squires Electric. SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. And we know that you broadcast to not just a supremely intelligent and educated audience, but also to a large degree, Dawn, an accomplished and moneyed audience.
Are they?
Including many people who are owners of their own businesses or who are planning their own commercial ventures of some kind. Whether
good for them.
Small or large, this is a land of entrepreneurs, Dawn, of people doing it for themselves. Not just sisters doing it for themselves now. It's everybody.
Are they bootstrappers?
That's right. They are. Well, such as our good friends, our good friends Lisa and Brian. They have the food cart, who, of course, come across unexpected issues because of the cold. And it affects all the whatnots and the things inside
the
their deal. And, yes, that.
The Primus gadgets.
That as well. So I'm just saying, if you got a business, you're going to be expanding it, or maybe you're just the first year that you've been operating your business, you're going to be moving into a different facility. One becomes two, becomes five, becomes whatever. Or you're doing that with your home. You're building remodeling your home or putting a different wing onto it, adding a room, augmenting your basement, whatever. When it gets to the electrical system, you don't want to screw around with that. I mean, you put a lot of money in your business, into your home. You put a lot of time into it, a lot of effort. You might as well do the same with all the stuff that you can't see as well as the stuff that you can. And to get that done properly, call Squires Electric, 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or SquiresElectric.com. They've been here for over a decade. Now come out to your home or your business and do whatever needs to be done in terms of wiring, whether it's Ethernet wiring, whether it's electrical wiring. Does not matter. They can make it work, and they'll make it work first time. And when they are gone, the house is going to look just as good as it did when they arrived. They're not going to leave a big pile of, schmutz everywhere. 503-252-1609. And if you're really lucky, if you call it's just sort of a lottery, I suppose. But if you really call the right time, they may in fact send Ben out to your place. And he's the handsome young man who's, I would say, you would say that he's in good physical shape, Don?
I would say so, yes.
A strapping young man. He's the proud possessor of a bitchin' Battlestar Galactica tattoo.
He is.
And
maybe he'll show it to you if you ask nicely and not in a salacious way.
That's right. And his girlfriend makes a fine lasagna, so maybe he'll bring some of that and offer to share. It's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. This is Don Taylor.
To prove his eligibility as a mayoral candidate, Rahm Emanuel spent 11 hours fielding questions from Chicagoans on Tuesday, addressing everything from how long he's lived in the Windy City to his relationship to the Communist Party. Some participants asked the former chief of staff if he had personally fired United States Department of Agriculture employee Shirley Sherrod, and if his job in Washington was 9-to-5. One man demanded to know whether current Mayor Daley's first name is Bill or Maggie, and then wondered whether Rahm had been involved in the 1993 siege in Waco, Texas.
Was there reason to believe that Mayor Daley's first name is Maggie? I mean, were there grounds for that assumption?
No.
Goddamn, people are stupid.
Also, that was the same guy who wondered if Rahm Emanuel had been involved in the siege on Waco.
By the way, can I just say, now that the elections are over, we had Anna Griffin was on the show, on the Rick Emerson show, as we were leading up to, to our election, God, is it now? It's already over a month ago, 6 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, but she was, talking about how, you got to get out there and vote. You don't. And here's the thing. I don't want most people voting. This is why when they say that, whoever you vote for, you just got to vote. That's just wrong. It's just incorrect. Most people are too dumb to be left in control of, a toaster, much less the fate of their city, their state, their country. So right there, that's your living proof. And seriously, you're in Chicago. I mean, what does it matter? I mean, you know, it's like you act like the whole place is not just sort of wired from the get-go. You have, again, a Mayor Daley in Chicago. Clearly, you're not a people who learn all that well. It's not like they retain knowledge and then adapt for the future.
They like a consistency in their corruption.
Well, it's like, you know who the head of the Teamsters was for most of the last decade? Yes, a guy named Jimmy Hoffa. So, I mean, you know, I'm just saying, people just sort of, you know, all right, whatever.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Good God. All right. I mean, do you ever just sort of like, you know, just take a good long look around you at this like zoo of a world and just think to yourself, it's a miracle that we can get through the day without just blowing ourselves up?
I try not to pay too much attention.
Good for you. All right. Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday.
Scarlett Johansson and Ryan Reynolds are breaking up.
I saw that last night. OMG. And I totally thought of you. You were the first. I swear to God. How sad is that? You were the first person I thought of.
After long and careful consideration on both our parts, we've decided to end our marriage, the entertainer said Tuesday through their publicist, Meredith O'Sullivan. We entered our relationship with love, and it's with love and kindness we leave it. While privacy isn't expected, it's certainly appreciated.
And as TMZ said, now we'll never get to see, like, how beautiful their children might have been.
I know.
Can you imagine?
They would have just had just, like, scary good-looking kids.
Yeah.
The 26-year-old actress and 34-year-old actor were engaged in May 2008 and married that September. The couple kept their courtship and nuptials private, releasing few details about their wedding and rarely appearing in public together. Johansson's recent credits include Iron Man 2 and He's Just Not That Into You. Reynolds appeared opposite Sandra Bullock in The Proposal, God help him, and stars in The Green Lantern, sent for release next year.
And also is the sexiest man alive, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He is the sexiest man alive.
Yeah.
So, according to People magazine.
Did you see who else is getting divorced?
Who?
Oh, see, I should make a guess.
Oh. Is it Alan Rickman? Wait, I can't.
Maybe.
I can't have Alan Rickman. My husband's in the hospital.
Now, is Alan Rickman a to your knowledge, a heterosexual man?
Yeah.
I don't know.
As far as I know.
I'm not saying. I mean, I'm just saying.
I don't know.
It's hard to tell. Here's the thing.
He is in my dreams, Rick Emerson.
Because there's that thing where it's like you go, like, gay or just European? Because, you know, and you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, like, sometimes there's a little bit of a
Alan Cumming. It took me a while to just go, okay, he is actually gay.
Okay, now he is, though?
Oh, yes, he's very... Oh, he's... Yes.
Okay.
He, like, sets the bar for gay.
Well, I thought... Now, see, I thought he was sort of a... I want to say Rupert Holmes. That's the Pina Colada guy.
Rupert Everett.
Rupert Everett. I thought he might just be sort of omnisexual.
No.
Where he'll just, like...
Well, maybe he is.
Like a chair, you know,
yeah,
or celery or whatever's around.
I could see that.
Well, anyway, it's not Alan Rickman. Don't go spoiling... Well, actually, I'll quiz you next hour.
Okay.
Don't go ruining it for me by telling her.
Film critic Roger Ebert's new movie review television show has been cleared to air in 192 markets across the U.S. and worldwide on the Armed Forces Network.
So awkward. It's so awkward. Have you watched it?
No.
Oh, my God. It's so unbelievably uncomfortable.
A post on Ebert's Twitter feed this week says Roger Ebert presents at the movies will debut January 21st. The Armed Forces Network broadcasts to more than 1,000 outlets in more than 175 countries. The Pulitzer Prize-winning Chicago Sun-Times critic lost his ability to speak and eat after cancer surgeries. He announced in September he would return to television using his computer voice on a special show segment called Roger's Office. The half-hour review program will air weekly. It'll feature thumbs up and thumbs down reviews made famous with his partner, Gene Siskel.
So if it's the same version of the show that, again, our friend Siegfried, who has the inside on, you know, line on all these things, he sent me a link to, I guess, I don't know if it was like a pilot or if it was a dry run of this or what, but it was like a full, was it Elvis Mitchell? Is that the guy from the Times? And I think A.O. Scott. And it was just, I mean, and they're doing that. I hate that you'd be, you know, I love Roger Ebert. I really do. I mean, and, you know, even whatever anybody thinks of him in terms of his weight as a critic or his how right he is or how wrong he is, here's the thing you can say about Roger Ebert is he obviously loves movies and he has done a great deal to bring, I think, knowledge of and appreciation of film in general and maybe to some degree of films that the average person would not have seen or experimented with, especially 20 years ago.
He's also a marvelous writer. He's a really brilliant writer.
Knows how to turn a phrase. And when they were still on like PBS or whatever it was, like back in the 80s, I mean, there was no internet, there was no whatever. And so that was the only place that I think a lot of people had. I sound like I'm doing his obituary. It was the only place a lot of people had to learn about movies that maybe you would never have thought to check out. Or like, I mean, that was the place I heard about... you know, like Hal Hartley and stuff. And I, you know, because I didn't, you know, I didn't, you know, and like Harold and Maude and movies like that. Like, I don't think I ever would have heard of them. So I'm not trying to knock Roger Ebert. I really love that guy. But this new show, it's like they've got him like at the back of a hall. You know, and he's like, the camera's over here, and it's like he's way, way over there, like they've forgotten to hit Zoom. And then he's like behind some curtaining or something, and like the lights are all off. And then there's just like, it's like he's being lit by like a Zippo that somebody's holding just off the, because he's got the no jaw, and it's like, and he just looks like I don't even like to talk about it because it's just so painful to discuss, but it's just like they're trying to make it work. And it's like, at a certain point, you got to just go, look, I've got the money, I've got the fame, my name's still on the show. I'm just gonna sit at home and wait for the checks to show up. You know, it's all very troubling. I advise skipping that.
Well, in happier news, Eminem will star in the film Southpaw, which was written by Sons of Anarchy creator Kurt Sutter. He'll play a world champion boxer who really hits the hard bottom and has to fight to win back his life for his young daughter, said Sutter to Deadline.com. Then what else we have? Oh. Jennifer Connelly's pregnant. She and Paul Bettany are going to have another kid.
Whatever.
Yeah, okay.
I've quit. Yeah, she went all pointy after she won the Oscar. I quit caring.
26-year-old Facebook founder and billionaire six times over Mark Zuckerberg was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year this week, joining the distinguished ranks of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, and Julian Assange.
And Hitler.
And the Tea Party and Hamid Karzai and the Chilean miners who were the runners-up. And, of course, you... Remember the year that you were Person of the Year on Time Magazine?
Those were my salad days.
Yeah. In a 10-page write-up of Zuckerman, Time's Lev Grossman retraces the history of the Internet and, by extension, Facebook, praising the technical whiz with wiring together a 1/12 of humanity into a single network, thereby creating a social entity almost twice as large as the United States. A few details about Zuckerberg's life have not already been covered. It will not amaze you to learn that Mark had a Star Wars-themed bar mitzvah, or that he drives a black Acura TSX, for which the billionaire is the automotive equivalent of a Hirschman. Anyway, he changed all our lives, apparently, Mark Zuckerberg.
But seriously, Hitler was Man of the Year.
Yeah.
Not making that up.
I know.
All right. Well, we got sound on that, but we can do that next hour.
Yeah. I got the other story.
Like
there.
Four. Yeah, there's like a whole bunch of stuff there. Yeah. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
That's all the entertainment news.
Really? Are we at the end of...
Yeah, right, we're pretty much at the end of the show. And we're gonna, you know. All right. Russia's new military uniforms, created by a top fashion designer, have landed hundreds in the hospital after proving too thin to withstand the winter cold. Rossiyskaya Gazeta newspaper reported that between 60 and 250 servicemen have been laid up with everything from flu to pneumonia as Arctic chills sweep through the country's northern reaches. They literally felt naked outside, the paper quoted the mother of one soldier, saying many of them ended up in the hospital. Our son developed pneumonia. The government daily said defense officials have admitted not receiving complaints about the uniforms in time to do anything ahead of the winter season. It seems that all this happened because of the slovenliness on our part, Joint Chief Staff General Nikolai Makarov told the Daily. Introduced in 2008, the parade uniforms, designed by fashion celebrity Valentin Yudashkin, are threaded with gold and more shapely and chic than the old uniforms, a throwback to the uniforms of the Imperial Tsarist Army. Unfortunately, the field versions are lighter and are come with thinner and more mobile boots.
Someone's family's going to be liquidated.
Russian designed its first post-Soviet uniform in the 1990s, but it was unpopular with officers who complained it made them look like they were serving in a third world army.
Seriously, here's the thing we can all agree on, is that dictatorships, they always have the best fashion sense. I don't know what the hell that is. There's something there. Maybe it's just that there's uniformity of, pardon the pun, of vision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Nazis, great fashion sense. You can't dispute that. And you look at all the post-Stalin era Soviet stuff. I mean, that's some iconography, right? There's this place, and it is not Sorel's, which a fine place. But there's a store in Hawthorne. They have a bust of Joseph Stalin.
Really?
I have my eye on it, but it's just like it's way too expensive. Mm. It's way too expensive. I mean, it's expensive, and it's like If something is expensive, but it's like going to cure your gout or whatever, I guess that's one thing. If you're just paying a lot of money for a bust of Joseph Stalin, it's like that just, that indicates so many things. Like, unless you've really just got lots of disposable income,
yeah,
it indicates something bad about you. So I'm going to have to wait on that.
If you're budgeting, you know, to afford the Stalin bust.
Yeah, because then
your priorities are a little out of whack.
That's the thing. That it implies that you need a bust of Joseph Stalin so badly that it supersedes, like, other needs in your life. And I think that's just that's advertising aspects of your personality that perhaps you don't, you just don't want to be waving around
that's
in public.
True.
All right. Let's end the show now. This has been another exciting episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson radio program is next at rickemerson.com. That show will cure your gout, I swear to God. Now, it will give you malaria, but it'll cure your gout. So it's kind of a wash. You can find out more at rickemerson.com. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district of glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agle, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. I want to thank you to Cascadia.fm. Don't forget you can get this program later on as a direct MP3 download here, legionofnews.com, and via iTunes. Robert Wagner sitting in for Don Taylor this afternoon, 4 p.m. Pacific time at Hamfisted Radio here at Cascadia.fm or at hamfistedradio.com. We'll see you tomorrow at noon. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday, won't you?